3. A sheet of glass. A man of fine character. Hidden words. On the day before making planetfall to the surface of Davin, Loken sought out Kirill Sinderman in Archive Chamber 3 to return the book he had borrowed from him. He made his way through the dusty stacks and piles of yellowed papers, lethargic globes of weak light bobbing just above head height, his heavy footsteps echoing loudly in the solemn hush. Here and there, a lone scholar clicked through the gloom in a tall stilt chair, but none was his old mentor. Loken travelled through yet another dizzyingly tall lane of manuscripts and leather-bound tomes, with names like Canticles of the Omniastron Dogma, Meditations on the Elegiac Hero, and Thoughts and Memories of Old Night. None of them was familiar, and he began to despair of ever finding Sinderman amidst this labyrinth of the arcane, when he saw the iterator's familiar, stooped form hunched over a long table and surrounded by collections of loose parchment bound with leather cords and piles of books. Sinderman had his back to him, and was so absorbed in his reading that, unbelievably, he didn't appear to have heard Loken's approach.
"More bad poetry?"
asked Loken, from a respectful distance. Sinderman jumped and looked over his shoulder with an expression of surprise and the same furtiveness he had displayed when Loken had first met him here.
"Gavil,"
said Sinderman, and Loken detected a note of relief in his tone.
"Were you expecting someone else?"
No, not at all. I seldom encounter others in this part of the archive. The subject matter is a little lurid for most of the serious scholars."
Loken moved around the table and scanned the paper spread before Sinderman. Tightly curled, unintelligible script, sepia woodcuts depicting snarling monsters and men swathed in flames. His eyes flicked to Sinderman, who chewed his bottom lip nervously at Loken's scrutiny.
"I must confess to have taken a liking to the old texts," explained Sinderman. "Like the Chronicles of Ursh I loaned you. It's bold, bloody stuff. Naive and overly hyperbolic, but stirring nonetheless."
"I have finished reading it, Kirill,"
said Loken, placing the book before Sinderman.
"And?"
"As you say, it's bloody, garish, and sometimes given to flights of fantasy. But I can't help thinking that you had an ulterior motive in giving me this book."
"Ulterior motive? No, Garfield. I assure you there was no such subterfuge,"
said Sinderman, though Loken could not be sure that he believed him.
"Are you sure? There are passages in there that I think have more than a hint of truth to them."
"Come now, Garfield. Surely you can't believe that," scoffed Sinderman.
"The Marengen,"
stated Loken.
"Arnold Keyes's final battle against the Nordafrik conclaves."
Sinderman hesitated.
"What about it?"
"I can see from your eyes that you already know what I'm going to say."
"No, Garfield, I don't. I know the passage you speak of, and, while it's certainly an exciting read, I hardly think you can take its prose too literally."
"I agree,"
nodded Loken.
"All the talk of the sky splitting like silk and the mountains toppling is clearly nonsense. But it talks of men becoming demons and turning on their fellows."
"Ah, now I see. You think that this is another clue as to what happened to Xavier Jubal?"
"Don't you?"
asked Loken, turning one of the yellowed parchments around to point at a fanged demon figure, clothed in fur with curling ram's horns and a bloody, skull-stamped axe.
"Jubal turned into a demon and tried to kill me. Just as happened to Arnold Keyser himself. One of his lieutenants, a man called Wilhelm Mardor, became a demon and killed him. Doesn't that sound familiar?"
Sinderman leaned back in his chair and closed his eyes. Loken saw how tired he looked, his skin the color of the parchments he perused, and his clothes hanging from his body as though draped across his bare bones. Loken realized that the venerable iterator was exhausted.
"I'm sorry, Kirill,"
he said, also sitting back.
"I didn't come here to pick a fight with you."
Sinderman smiled, reminding Loken of how much he had come to rely on his wise counsel. Though not a tutor as such, Cinderman had filled the role of Loken's mentor and instructor for some time, and it had come as a great shock to discover that Cinderman did not have all the answers.
It's all right, Garvey. It's good that you have questions. It shows you are learning that there is often more to the truth than what we see at first. I'm sure the War Master values that aspect of you. How is the Commander?
Tired, admitted Loken. The demands of those crying for his attention grow more strident every day. Communiques from every expedition in the Crusades seek to pull him in all directions, and insulting directives from the Council of Terror seek to turn him into a damned administrator instead of the War Master. He carries a huge burden, Kirill. But don't you think you can change the subject that easily?
Cinderman laughed.
You are becoming too quick for me, Garvey. Very well. What is it you want to know?
The men in the book, who were said to use sorcerer's powers. Were they warlocks?
I don't know, admitted Cinderman. It's certainly possible. The powers they used certainly do not sound natural.
But how could their leaders have sanctioned the use of such powers? Surely they must have seen how dangerous it was.
Perhaps. But think on this. We know so little on the subject, and we have the light of the Emperor's wisdom and science to guide us. How much less must they have known?
Even a barbarian must know that such things are dangerous, said Loken.
Barbarian, said Cinderman. A pejorative term indeed, my friend. Do not be so quick to judge. We are not so different from the tribes of old Earth as you might think.
Surely you're not serious, asked Loken. We are as different from them as a star from a planet.
Are you so sure, Garvey? You believe that the wall separating civilization from barbarism is as solid as steel, but it is not. I tell you the division is a thread, a sheet of glass. A touch here, a push there, and you bring back the reign of pagan superstition, fear of the dark and the worship of fell beings in echoing fanes.
You exaggerate.
Do I? Asked Cinderman, leaning forward. Imagine a newly compliant world that experiences a shortage of some vital resource, such as fuel, water, or food. How long would it take before civilized behavior broke down and barbaric behavior took over? Would human selfishness cause some to fight to get that resource at all costs, even if it meant harm to others and trafficking with evil? Would they deprive others of this resource, or even destroy them in an effort to keep it for themselves? Common decency and civil behavior are just a thin veneer over the animal at the core of mankind that gets out whenever it has the chance.
You make it sound like there's no hope for us.
Far from it, Gavir, said Cinderman, shaking his head. Mankind continually stands bewildered in the presence of its own creation, but thanks to the great works of the Emperor, I firmly believe that the time will come when we will rise to mastery of all before us. The time that has passed since civilization began is but a fragment of the duration of our existence, and but a fragment of the ages yet to come. The rule of the Emperor, brotherhood in society, equality in rights and privileges, and universal education foreshadow the higher plane of society to which our experience, intelligence, and knowledge are steadily tending. It will be a revival, in a higher form, of the liberty, equality, and fraternity of the ancient tribes of man before the rise of warlords like Caligan or Nathan Doom.
Loken smiled.
And to think I thought you were in despair.
Cinderman returned Loken's smile and said,
No, Garvey, far from it. I admit I was shaken after the Whisperheads, but the more I read, the more I see how far we have come and how close we are to achieving everything we ever dreamed of. Each day I am thankful that we have the light of the Emperor to guide us into this golden future. I dread what might become of us, were he to be taken from us.
Don't worry, said Logan. That will never happen.
Aximand looked through a gap in the netting and said,
Erebus is here.
Horus nodded and turned to face the four members of the Mournival.
You all know what to do.
No, said Torgadon. We've completely forgotten. Why don't you remind us?
Horus's eyes darkened at Tarek's levity, and he said,
Enough, Tarek. There is a time for jokes, and this isn't it. So keep your mouth shut.
Torgadon looked shocked at the War Master's outburst, and shot a hurt glance at his fellows. Logan was less shocked, having witnessed the commander raging at subordinates many times in the weeks since they had departed the marches of the Interrex. Horus had known no peace since the terrible bloodshed amid the House of Devices on Zenobia, and the deaths and the missed opportunity of unification with the Interrex haunted him still. Since the debacle with the Interrex, the War Master had withdrawn into a sullen melancholy, remaining more and more within his inner sanctum, with only Erebus to counsel him. The Mournival had barely seen their commander since returning to Imperial space, and they all keenly felt their exclusion from his presence. Where once they had offered the War Master their guidance, now only Erebus whispered in his ear. Thus it was with some relief that the Mournival heard that Erebus would take his leave of the expedition and journey ahead with his own legion to Davin. Even while en route to the Davin system, the War Master had not had a moment's peace. Repeated requests for aid or tactical assistance came to him from all across the galaxy, from brother primarchs, army commanders, and, most loathed of all, the army of civil administrators who followed in the wake of their conquests. The exactors from Terra, led by a high administrix called Enid Rathbone, plagued the War Master daily for assistance in their dispersal throughout the compliant territories to begin the collection of the Emperor's tithe. Everyone with an ounce of common sense knew that such a measure was premature, and Horus had done all he could to stall Rathbone and her exactors, but there was only so long they could be kept at bay.
If I had my choice,
Horus had told Logan one evening as they had discussed fresh ways of delaying the taxation of compliant worlds,
I would kill every exactor in the Imperium, but I'm sure we would be getting tax bills from hell before breakfast.
Logan had laughed, but the laughter had died in his throat when he realized that Horus was serious. They had reached Davin, and there were more important matters to deal with.
Remember, said Horus, this plays out exactly as I have told you.
A revered hush fell on the assemblage, and every person present dropped to one knee as the Emperor's chosen proxy made his entrance. Carcassi felt faint at the sight of the living god, arrayed as he was in a magnificent suit of plate armor the color of a distant ocean and a cloak of deepest purple. The eye of terror shone on his breast, and Carcassi was overcome by the magisterial beauty of the War Master. To have spent so long in the 63rd expedition and only now to lay eyes upon the War Master seemed the grossest waste of his time. And Carcassi resolved to tear out the pages he'd written in the Bondsman No. 7 this week and compose an epic soliloquy on the nobility of the commander. The Mournival followed him, together with a tall, statuesque woman in a crimson velveteen gown with high collars and puffed sleeves, her long hair worn in an impractical-looking coiffure. He felt his indignation rise as he realized this must be Vivar, the remembrancer from Terra that they had heard about. Horus raised his arms and said,
Friends, I keep telling you that no one need kneel in my presence. Only the Emperor is deserving of such an honor.
Slowly, as though reluctant to cease their veneration of this living god, the crowd rose to its feet as Horus passed amongst those closest to him, shaking hands and dazzling them with his easy charm and spontaneous wit. Carcassi watched the faces of those the War Master spoke to, feeling intense jealousy swell within his breast at the thought of not being so favored. Without thinking, he began pushing his way through the crowd towards the front, receiving hostile glares and the odd elbow to the gut for his troubles. He felt a tug on the collar of his robe and craned his neck to rebuke whoever had thought to handle his expensive garments so roughly. He saw Euphrati Keeler behind him and, at first, thought she was attempting to pull him back. But then he saw her face and smiled as he realized that she was coming with him, using his bulk like a plough. He managed to get within 6 or 7 people of the front, when he remembered why he had been allowed within this august body in the first place. He tore his eyes from the Warmaster to watch Erebus of the Word-Bearers. Carcassi knew little of the 17th Legion, save that its Primarch, Lorgar, was a close and trusted brother of Horus. Both legions had fought and shed their blood together many times for the glory of the Imperium. The members of the Mournival came forward and, one by one, embraced Erebus as a long-lost brother. They laughed and slapped each other's armour in welcome, though Carcassi saw a measure of reticence in the embrace between Loken and Erebus.
"Focus, Ignace, focus," he whispered to himself as he found his gaze straying once again to the glory of the Warmaster.
He tore his eyes from Horus in time to see Abaddon and Erebus shake hands one last time and saw a gleam of silver pass between their palms. He couldn't be sure it had happened so fast, but it had looked like a coin or medal of some sort. The Mournival and Viva then took up positions a respectful distance behind the Warmaster, as Malaghurst assumed his place at his master's side. Horus lifted his arms and said, "You must bear with me once again, my friends, as we gather to discuss our plans to bring truth and light to the dark places." Polite laughter and clapping spread towards the edges of the yurt as Horus continued. "Once again, we return to Davin, site of a great triumph, and the 8th world brought into compliance. Truly it is..."
"Warmaster," came a voice from the centre of the yurt.
The word was spoken softly, and the audience let out a collective gasp at such a flagrant breach of etiquette. Carcassi saw the Warmaster's expression turn thunderous, understanding that he was obviously unused to being interrupted, before switching his scrutiny back to the speaker. The crowd drew back from Erebus, as though afraid that mere proximity to him might somehow taint them with his temerity.
"Erebus," said Malaghurst, "you have something to say?"
"Merely a correction, Equerry,"
explained the word-bearer. Carcassi saw Malaghurst give the Warmaster a wary sidelong glance.
"A correction, you say? What would you have corrected?"
"The Warmaster said that this world is compliant," said Erebus.
"Davin is compliant."
Erebus shook his head sadly, and for the briefest instant, Carcassi detected a trace of dark amusement in his next pronouncement.
"No," said Erebus, "it is not."
Loken felt his collar rise at this affront to their honour, and sensed the anger of the Mournival in the stiffening of their backs. Surprisingly, Aximand went so far as to reach for his sword, but Torgadon shook his head and little Horus reluctantly removed his hand from his weapon. He had known Erebus for only a short time, but Loken had seen the respect and esteem the softly spoken chaplain of the Word-Bearers commanded. His counsel had been sage, his manner easy, and his faith in the Warmaster unshakable. But Erebus's subtle infiltration to the Warmaster's side had unsettled Loken in ways beyond simple jealousy. Since taking counsel from the first chaplain, the commander had become sullen, needlessly argumentative and withdrawn. Malaghurst himself had expressed his concern to the Mournival over the Word-Bearer's growing influence upon the Warmaster. After a conversation with Erebus in the Vengeful Spirit's forward observation deck, Loken had known that there was more to the first chaplain than met the eye. Seeds of suspicion had been planted in his heart that day, and Erebus's words were now like fresh spring rain upon them. After the influence he had accumulated since Anobia, Loken could hardly believe that Erebus would now choose to behave in such a boorish manner.
"Would you care to elaborate on that?"
asked Malaghurst, visibly struggling to keep his temper. Loken had never admired the equerry more.
"I would," said Erebus, "but perhaps these might be matters best discussed in private." Say what you have to say, Erebus. This is the War Council, and there are no secrets here, said Horus. And Loken knew that whatever role the War Master had planned for them was an irrelevance now. He saw that the other members of the Mournival realized this too.
My lord, began Erebus, I apologize if...
Save your apology, Erebus, said Horus. You have a nerve to come before me like this. I took you in and gave you a place at my war council, and this is how you repay me. With dishonor. With insolence. I'll not stand for it. I'll tell you that right now. Do you understand me?
I do, my lord. And though dishonor was intended, if you would allow me to continue, you will see that I mean no insult.
A crackling tension filled the yurt, and Loken silently willed the War Master to put an end to this farce and retire to somewhere more secluded. But he could see the War Master's blood was up, and there would be no backing down from this confrontation.
Go on, said Horus, through gritted teeth.
As you know, we left here 6 decades ago, my lord. Davin was compliant and seemed as though it would become an enlightened part of the Imperium. Sadly, that has not proved to be the case.
Get to the point, Erebus, said Horus, his fists clenching in murderous balls.
Of course. En route to Sardis and our rendezvous with the 203rd Fleet, the revered Lord Corpharon bade me detour to Davin that I might ensure the word of the Emperor, beloved by all, was being maintained by Commander Temba and the forces left with him.
Where is Temba, anyway? Demanded Horus. I gave him enough men to pacify any last remnants of resistance. Surely, if this world was no longer compliant, I would have heard about it.
Eugen Temba is a traitor, my lord, said Erebus. He is on the moon of Davin and no longer recognizes the Emperor as his lord and master.
Traitor! Shouted Horus. Impossible! Eugen Temba was a man of fine character and admirable martial spirit. I chose him personally for this honor. He would never turn traitor.
Would that that were true, my lord, said Erebus,
sounding genuinely regretful.
Well, what in the name of the Emperor is he doing on the moon?
Asked Horus.
The tribes on Davin itself were honorable and readily accepted compliance, but those on the moon did not, explained Erebus. Temba led his men in a glorious but ultimately foolhardy expedition to the moon to bring the tribes there into line.
Why foolhardy? Such is the duty of an imperial commander.
It was foolhardy, my lord, for the tribes of the moon do not understand respect as we do, and it appears that when Temba attempted an honorable parley with them, they employed means to twist the perceptions of our men and turn them against you.
Means?
Speak plainly, man, said Horus. I hesitate to name them, my lord, but they are what might be described in the ancient texts as, well, sorcery.
Loken felt the humours in his blood swing wildly out of balance at this mention of sorcery, and a gasp of disbelief swept around the yurt at such a notion.
Temba now serves the master of Davin's moon, and has spat on his oaths of loyalty to the Emperor. He names you as the lackey of a fallen god.
Loken had never met Eugen Temba, but he felt his hatred of the man rise like a sickness in his gorge at this terrible insult to the War Master's honor. An astonished wailing swept round the yurt as the assembled warriors felt this insult as keenly as he did.
He will pay for this, roared Horus. I will tear his head off and feed his body to the crows. By my honor, I swear this.
My lord, said Erebus, I am sorry to be the bearer of such ill news, but surely this is a matter best left to those appointed beneath you.
You would have me dispatch others to avenge this stain upon my honor, Erebus? Demanded Horus. What sort of warrior do you take me for? I signed the decree of compliance here, and I'll be damned if the only world to backslide from the Imperium is one that I conquered!
Horus turned to the Mournival.
Ready a spear tip! Now!
Very well, my lord,
said Abaddon.
Who shall lead it?
I will,
said Horus. The war council was dismissed, all other concerns and matters due before it shelved by this terrible development. A frantic vigor seized the 63rd expedition as commanders returned to their units and word spread of Eugen Temba's treachery. Amid the urgent preparations for departure, Loken found Ignace Carcassi in the yurt so recently vacated by the incensed war council. He sat with an open book before him, writing with great passion and pausing only to sharpen his nib with a small pocket knife.
Ignace, said Loken.
Carcassi looked up from his work, and Loken was surprised at the amusement he saw in the remembrance's face.
Quite a meeting, eh? Are they all that dramatic?
Loken shook his head.
No, not usually. What are you writing?
This, just a quick poem about the vile Temba, said Carcassi. Nothing special. Just a stream of consciousness kind of thing. I thought it appropriate given the mood of the expedition.
I know. I just can't believe anyone could say such a thing.
Nor I. And I think that's the problem.
What do you mean?
I'll explain,
said Carcassi, rising from his seat and making his way towards the untouched bowls of cold meat and helping himself to a plateful.
I remember a piece of advice I heard about the War Master. It was said that a good trick upon meeting him was to look at his feet, because if you caught his eye, you'd quite forget what it was you were going to say.
I have heard that too. Aximand told me the same thing.
Well, it's obviously a good piece of advice, because I was quite taken aback when I saw him up close for the first time. Quite magnificent. Almost forgot why I was there.
I'm not sure I understand,
said Loken, shaking his head as Carcassi offered him some meat from the plate.
Put it this way, can you imagine anyone who had actually met Horus? May I call him Horus? I hear you're not too fond of us mere mortals calling him that, saying such a thing as this Temba person is supposed to have said.
Loken struggled to keep up with Carcassi's rapid delivery, realizing that his anger had blinded him to the simple fact of the War Master's glory.
You're right, Ignace. No one who'd met the War Master could say such things.
So the question then becomes, why would Erebus say that Temba had said it?
I don't know. Why would he?
Carcassi swallowed some of the meat on his plate and washed it down with a drink of the white liquor.
Why indeed?
Asked Carcassi, warming to the weaving of his tail.
Tell me, have you had the pleasure of meeting Eleuta Hergig? She's a remembrancer, one of the dramatists, and pens some dreadfully overwrought plays. Tedious things, if you ask me, but I can't deny that she has some skill in treading the boards herself. I remember watching her play Lady Ophelia in The Tragedy of Amleti, and she was really rather good, though...
Ignace, warned Loken, get to the point.
Oh, yes, of course. My point is that as talented an actress as Ms. Hergig is, she couldn't hold a candle to the performance given by Erebus today.
Performance?
Indeed. Everything he did from the moment he entered this yurt was a performance. Didn't you see it?
No. I was too angry, admitted Loken. That's why I wanted you there. Explain it to me simply, and without digressions, Ignace.
Carcassi beamed in pride before continuing.
Very well. When he first spoke of Davin's non-compliance, Erebus suggested taking the matter somewhere more private. Yet he had just broached this highly provocative subject in a room full of people, and did you notice? Erebus said that Temba had turned against him, Horus, not the Emperor, Horus. He made it personal.
But why would he seek to provoke the War Master so?
Perhaps to unbalance his humour in order to bring his choler to the fore. It's not like he wouldn't have known what his reaction would be. I think Erebus wanted the War Master in a position where he wasn't thinking clearly.
Be careful, Ignace. Are you suggesting that the War Master does not think clearly?
No, 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 said Carcassi. Only that with his humours out of balance, Erebus was able to manipulate him.
Manipulate him to what end?
Carcassi shrugged.
I don't know.
But what I do know is that Erebus wants Horus to go to Davin's moon. But he counselled against going there. He even had the nerve to suggest that others go in the War Master's place.
Carcassy shook his hand, dismissively.
Only so as to look like he had tried to stop him from his course of action, while knowing full well that the War Master couldn't back down from this insult to his honour.
"And nor should he, Remembrancer,"
said a deep voice at the entrance to the yurt. Carcassy jumped, and Loken turned at the sound of the voice, to see the first captain of the Sons of Horus resplendent and huge in his plate armour.
"Ezekiel," said Loken, "what are you doing here?"
"Looking for you," said Abaddon. "You should be with your company. The War Master himself is to lead the spear tip, and you waste time with scriveners who call into question the word of an honourable Astartes."
"First Captain Abaddon," breathed Carcassy, lowering his head. "I meant no disrespect. I was just apprising Captain Loken of my impressions of what I heard."
"Be silent, worm," snapped Abaddon. "I should kill you where you stand for the dishonor you do to Erebus."
"Ignace was just doing what I asked him to do," Loken pointed out.
"You put him up to this, Garvey?"
asked Abaddon.
"I'm disappointed in you."
"There's something not right about this, Ezekiel," said Loken. "Erebus isn't telling us everything."
Abaddon shook his head.
"You wouldn't take this fool's word over that of a brother Astartes.
Your dalliance with petty wordsmiths has turned your head around, Loken. The commander shall hear of this."
"I sincerely hope so," said Loken, his anger growing at Abaddon's easy dismissal of his concerns. "I will be standing next to you when you tell him."
The first captain turned on his heel and made to leave the yurt.
"First Captain Abaddon," said Carcassy, "might I ask you a question?"
"No, you may not,"
snarled Abaddon, but Carcassy asked anyway.
"What was the silver coin you gave Erebus when you met him?"